This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
UNICEF warns that some 1 million Afghan children could die this year due to severe acute malnutrition without immediate action. And blocks of lava as large as three-story buildings fall from a volcano on the Spanish island of La Palma, with tremors shaking the region 3 weeks after its first eruption. Our top story in Chile: riot police have clashed with protesters during a rally by the indigenous Mapuche community. Riot police used tear gas and water cannons to disperse protesters. Authorities said that 18 people were injured and 10 arrested during the clashes. About 1,000 activists marched in the center of Santiago, demanding autonomy for the Mapuche. The Chilean state has long been accused of discrimination against the Mapuche people, the country's largest indigenous group. The community controlled vast areas of Chile centuries ago, but has since been marginalized. The Algerian president says a return of Algeria's ambassador to France is conditional on total respect for his country. Abdelmadjid Tebboune said Algeria is not a French colony any longer, adding that history should not be falsified. Algeria recalled its envoy to Paris last week, citing comments attributed to the French president Emmanuel Macron that Algeria's rulers had rewritten the history of its colonization based on, quote, a hatred of France. The following day, Algeria banned French military planes from its airspace amid the tensions with Paris. Political commentator Abiyomi Ezekwe says that France's policies toward African countries, including Algeria, are still rooted in colonialism.
It's not surprising. It follows a pattern of many people on the African continent that have been criticizing France for the continuation of its legacy of colonialism and enslavement. Just a few weeks ago, Macron had a meeting with some Algerians who had fought alongside Paris during the war for national liberation in Algeria during the 1950s and 60s. And that's where those statements that you quoted earlier were made. So he's suggesting that there was really no Algerian nation prior to the advent of French colonialism way back in 1830. They colonized the country for over 130 years. And during the war between 1954 and 1962, over a million Algerians were killed as a result of the French colonial forces. They have never apologized. They've never offered to pay reparations. And it adds insult to injury for them to suggest that they had committed no colonial crimes in Algeria.
Palestinian farmers and traders in the Gaza Strip have held a protest at the Karam Abu Salem crossing, demanding an end to what they call suffocating closure by Israel. The crossing serves as a main gate connecting Gazans to the outside world. Ruba Shabit has your details.
Karam Abu Salem crossing, the only crossing into the Gaza Strip for import and export, is under the control of Israel. It keeps imposing restrictions on movement and trade process. The Israeli closure of Karam Abu Salem threatens the economic sector of the Gaza Strip. These threats come in light of the catastrophic economic and humanitarian conditions that the residents of the Gaza Strip have been experiencing for more than 15 years of siege and closure.
About 90% of the Palestinian economy depends on the agricultural sector that is going through many disasters these days, including the continuous wars on Gaza, especially the 2021 escalation. Repeated closures of Karam Abu Salem crossing has negatively affected all aspects of life in the Gaza Strip.
To voice their anger at Israeli restrictions, Palestinian farmers and traders gathered at Karam Abu Salem crossing, the only way for their crops to be sold in markets abroad.
We have lost our money in wine due to the Israeli restrictions. Israel is pursuing a policy aimed at destroying our economy and making us isolated from the world. We demand an urgent help to export our crops to the West Bank and abroad.
Palestinian farmers and traders also expressed the crossing closure as an aggressive act that reflects Israeli insistence on besieging 2 million Palestinians in the Gaza Strip.
By depriving us of exporting our crops, Israel intends to create chaos in our life. This has already affected our economy and made our life harder. I don't see any promising future for my family.
In light of the Israeli closure of the only crossing in the Gaza Strip, Palestinian farmers and traders who depend on exporting crops for a living are calling on the international community to make action and stop these restrictions that caused serious financial losses. Ruba Shabet, Gaza.
Welcome, everyone, to the Press News Review program, where we get in-depth in one of the day's top stories. And now the United Nations Children's Fund warns that some 1 million Afghan children facing severe acute malnutrition could die this year without immediate action. The agency added that children in Afghanistan are also at risk of contracting diseases, including the measles and diarrhea that have exacerbated the situation for them. UNICEF has called for an immediate resumption of vaccination campaigns against polio, the measles, COVID-19 in Afghanistan. UN has repeatedly raised the alarm about a potential humanitarian catastrophe in the country in recent weeks, calling on donor nations to honor their financial pledges. And now joining us for the program is Mr. Richard Black, a former member of the Virginia State Senate, joining us from Ashburn, Virginia, and Dr. Wilmer Leone, columnist and political scientist, joining us from the U.S. Capitol, Washington, D.C. Gentlemen, I'd like to welcome you both to the program. Senator Black, we're going to start with you. I guess if you're the West, how do you hurt? Obviously, you have issue with the Taliban. How do you hurt the Taliban? Obviously, the West always resorts to sanctions regimes and crippling sanctions, economic sanctions. So basically, is there any other path where you could hurt a government that you do not like without taking it out on the women and children of that country?
I don't believe that the Biden administration wants to hurt the people of Afghanistan. I think that when the Taliban took control, I think the people in the West, the United States, and in fact people in other parts of the world expected that there might very well be a bloodbath. This is not developed. In fact, the Taliban, in my impression, have handled things with relative dignity. They have not been overly harsh with the people. But here's the problem, is that any time that a country leaves, an army leaves a country, there's going to be a degree of chaos. And there was with this evacuation when the Americans left, and it caused a tremendous political backlash for President Biden, rightly or wrongly. Right now, he's in a very awkward position because it is difficult for him to turn around and do things that are helpful to the Afghan people. I have confidence in Secretary of State Tony Blinken that he will do what he can, but he has limited maneuvering space because Americans don't understand that the $9.5 billion that is held in American banks, they don't understand that it belongs to the Afghan people and not somehow to the United States. It's very difficult to get that point across. One thing that I would very much like to see, and I think this is doable, when the United States evacuated Afghanistan, we cut off remittances, financial remittances, through Western Union. Western Union had the ability to issue cash out if the cash was sent from other countries by Afghan people who were living in the United States or wherever. This amounted to quite a bit of money, and I think perhaps the Taliban should be proposing to the United States that they just quietly reopen these Western Union offices so that at least that funding can get through. I did notice that all countries have pledged $1 billion through the United Nations for relief for Afghanistan. I think they need to get more serious. I noticed that China has committed $31 million, which is only 3%, and China is a great economic power. I think they can afford to do more. But beyond that, I look at some of the very wealthy Islamic countries for whom providing relief would be nothing. I look at Saudi Arabia, at Kuwait, at the UAE, and at Qatar. And I think they're in a position to put forward funds for a fellow Islamic country. I think in time the United States will be helpful. I think the Biden administration would like to help, but the political restraints are very difficult on them right now.
Thank you, Senator. And Dr. Wilmer Leon, thank you for being patient with us. Welcome to the program, sir. Now, Senator Black's point, $1 billion has been pledged. Only 18% of that has reached the country. The UN just a couple weeks ago actually said that by the year's end, and we very well know it's almost the end of the year, a couple months to go, between 3 and 5 million children will possibly be being treated for acute severe malnutrition. How do we stop this? Your initial thoughts, Dr. Leon.
$1 billion committed by the UN pales in comparison to the $2 or almost $3 trillion that the United States wasted over 41 years in invading the country. The United States caused this problem. The UAE did not invade Afghanistan. Bahrain did not invade Afghanistan. Qatar did not invade Afghanistan. China did not invade Afghanistan. The United States illegally invaded the country and has been there for 41 years. So it's time for the United States to actually do what it talks about and says that it's about. We, beyond the war on terror, the United States claims that, oh, we had to go into Afghanistan because the Taliban treats women so poorly and the Taliban does all of these other heinous things towards people. Well, why doesn't the United States? Look, we have polio vaccine. We have COVID vaccine. We know how to deal with diphtheria. We know how to deal with diarrhea. We know how to build water systems. If we take the same mental horsepower that we wasted for 41 years illegally invading the country and then actually doing something good for the world, imagine the impact that that'll have on the mindset and the perception of the world towards the United States. It's also very interesting that a similar report from the United Nations was issued about 3 months ago relating to Yemen. A similar, I can't remember the exact numbers, but a catastrophic famine and children are gonna die in Yemen. And who is facilitating the illegal attack in Yemen? It's not Qatar, it's the United States that is providing the logistical support to the Saudi people, to the Saudi government, as they illegally bomb the people in Yemen.
And arms.
There is a consistent pattern here of the United States not doing anything compared to what it talks about. If the United States is going to talk about it, it needs to be about it.
Gentlemen, thank you both. It's always a pleasure to have you both join us, and you make it very fruitful, our news review program. Senator Retcher Black joining us from Ashburn, Virginia, and Dr. Wilmer Leone joining us from Washington, D.C. Goodbye and stay safe, both of you. That's a wrap for this segment of your News Review program. Thank you for tuning in, and goodbye for now. And welcome back, everyone. Electricity has been restored in Lebanon 24 hours after a nationwide blackout caused by two power stations shut down. The country's energy minister said a fuel shortage had caused the day-long outage, stating the grid resumes normal operations afterwards. It noted the central bank has approved granting about $100 million in credit to buy fuel and keep its power stations running. The Lebanese army also agreed to provide some of its fuel to get the power stations up and running again until more fuel can be imported. Lebanon has been grappling with a crippling energy crisis. Iran has helped alleviate the situation by sending fuel shipments to the Arab country. Vote counting is underway in Iraq as polling stations close in the country's parliamentary elections. Preliminary results are expected Monday. Nearly 25 million people were eligible to cast their ballots. Around 3,500 candidates competed to enter the 329-seat parliament. Candidates include around 1,000 women. Election was the fifth parliamentary vote in Iraq since former dictator Saddam Hussein was ousted in 2003. Iraq's top Shia cleric, Grand Ayatollah Ali al-Sistani, called for a large voter turnout. Security has been tightened with airports closed until Monday morning nationwide. Voters said that they hope the elections will bring about change.
Today, we came to participate in the elections, my family and I, so that we ask for our demands. The population's demand to have early elections. God willing, our participation in the elections is a new path for Iraq, with new faces that we choose, so that we continue to have ambitions for change.
Prime Minister Mustafa al-Kadhimi and resistance leader Qais al-Kazali cast their ballots in Baghdad. This year's election was held under a new electoral law, which divides Iraq into 83 constituencies instead of 18. That's meant to help independent candidates. Vote came a year earlier than scheduled in response to protests, which broke out in 2019. Those protests called for better public services and end to corruption and economic woes. Iraqi elections are often followed by months of negotiations over a president, a prime minister, and a cabinet. Volcano on the Spanish island of La Palma keeps spewing that is molten rock 3 weeks after its first eruption. Blocks of red-hot lava as large as three-story buildings rolled down a hillside on Sunday while a series of tremors shook the ground. There were 21 seismic movements, with the largest measuring 3.8 on the Richter scale. On Saturday, there was a partial cone collapse near the volcano's emission vent, which caused the release of large blocks of molten rock. Lava has destroyed nearly 1,200 buildings since the eruption on September 19th. About 6,000 people have been evacuated from their homes on La Palma, which has about 83,000 residents. We'll have to leave you with that, everyone. Thank you for tuning in to World News, and goodbye for now.
We are with you. What about you? IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
the limelight.
The South Florida Coalition for Palestine, a coalition of social justice organizations, has called for a campaign to boycott duty-free Americas because of the role its owners play in funding the settler movement's expulsion of Palestinians from their homes and land. In this regard, we have prepared an article for you written by Donna Neville Ryder. This article is titled, Boycott Duty-Free Americas. Don't buy airport goods that fund Zionist settlers. Palestinian lawyer Mohammad Khatib once dreamed of bringing his own children back to write the swing in the Roman olive tree there he used to play as a child, but that vision was shattered by the ongoing illegal expansion of the Israeli settlements. I always dreamed that this olive tree and this place that I used to play when I was a child, that my children will play there, Khatib said, adding, unfortunately, this has been demolished. This has been uprooted, and its place, they have built a huge settlement. Khatib's story is all too familiar. The settlement enterprise backed by the Zionist regime is responsible for stealing Palestinian land and has destroyed approximately 48,000 Palestinian homes in the occupied territories since 1967. This ongoing process of settler colonialism began prior to the Zionist regime's creation in 1948, when 750,000 Palestinians were expelled from their land and homes by the Zionist movement. Known as Nakba, or catastrophe in Arabic, it continues to this day. Khatib, a human rights activist, was invited to share his experiences at the recent online launch of the campaign to boycott Duty-Free Americas, that is DFA, a chain of stores owned by a family that has donated millions of dollars to fund right-wing Israeli settler organizations. Owned by Falik family from South Florida, Duty-Free Americas operates over 180 duty-free stores that sell items like chocolates at airports and border crossings across the U.S. and Latin America. As reported by the Associated Press, the Falik family has donated at least $5.6 million to settler groups in the West Bank and East Al-Quds over the past decade. And according to Haaretz, the Falik family also operates the Panama-based Seagull Foundation for the Israeli regime, which ran afoul of even Israeli law because it did little more than transfer millions of shekels to right-wing organizations in occupied territories. As documented by the Palestinian-led campaign Defund Racism, so-called charitable funds raised in the U.S. from donors such as the Falik family are used to carry out the mission of the Israeli settler organizations. The South Florida Coalition for Palestine, a coalition of social justice organizations, has called for a campaign to boycott duty-free Americas because of the role its owners play in funding the settler movement's expulsion of Palestinians from their own homes and land. The coalition felt a particular responsibility to initiate this campaign given that the headquarters of duty-free Americas and its owners are based in South Florida. At the launch of the boycott campaign against Duty Free America, South Florida Coalition for Palestine member Ken Barnes, who is also a South Florida representative with Jewish Voice for Peace said, "We are boycotting due to Free Americans until they stop funding Israeli apartheid." Anas Amira, another coalition member representing Al-Auda, the Palestinian Right to Return Coalition, echoed this sentiment, saying, "A corporation or business that funds the ethnic cleansing of an indigenous nation must be held accountable." Meanwhile, in a video produced by Defund Racism campaign and shown at the launch, Muhammad Al-Kurd, a writer, poet and activist from Sheikh Jarrah, explained the role of settler organizations. "You know, we often say and speak about this settler colonialism," he said, "but when you see how it manifests and how this subtle colonialism crystallizes in real life, it is through the settler organizations who actively work to displace Palestinians or isolate Palestinians from one another in the Nakab, in occupied 48 territories, or in the West Bank." Khatib emphasized that settlements are violent places, explaining that many Israeli settlers are ready to kill, beat, and threaten Palestinian farmers to prevent them from reaching their homes and land. Khatib said, "What these settlers are doing, no one could imagine and accept it. And all of this is coming from American support. Let's end U.S. complicity in Zionist settler colonialism," added Bana Abu Zulof of the Good Shepherd Collective and Defund Racism campaign, discussing the importance of using multidimensional strategies and identifying clear targets in boycott campaigns such as this one. "The organizers of the campaign to boycott duty-free Americas intend to engage in protests and community education to continue to strategize and coordinate with partners in the U.S. and in Palestine. A simple ask coming from the coalition is for the people to send photos with signs saying, 'Boycott Duty-Free Americas' or 'DFA funds ethnic cleansing at the airport,' in front of DFA shops or at home." The groups representing the coalition say they are committed to long-term organizing and community building around this issue. Samir Kalki from the South Florida Muslim Federation spoke at the launch of the campaign about the power of organizing collectively and collaboratively, saying, "While we are constantly in a state of heartache due to the ongoing apartheid and occupation of the Israeli regime, we are also strengthened by the very strong and principled resistance taking place in Palestine and across the globe. Individuals, groups, and communities must continue to come together and collaborate in partnership, for the best results will come from working as a powerful collective." The organizers of the boycott campaign understand that there will surely be opposition coming from supporters of the Zionist settlements and from those who deny Palestinians their humanity. But Lara Ghanem of the Florida branch of the Council on American-Islamic Relations urged activists to remain steadfast in their clarity about the reasons for the campaign. She said, "This is about human rights. This is about the silence of the world leaders as 73 years of violence continue against the Palestinian people. And this is why it is vital for us, everyone here today, everyone watching, to join the campaign to boycott duty-free Americas."
IRIB English Radio presents
Viewpoints.
Viewpoints.
With the presence of different scholars.
With the presence of different scholars. IRIB English Radio.
Assalamu alaikum to the listeners of IRIB English Radio. This is Viewpoints and Analysis on the thoughts and speeches of the leader of Iran, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei. I'm Atta, the host of this program. With me in the studio are two guest speakers from the Islamic House of Qom, Sheikh Sadiq and Brother Ali. Assalamu alaikum to both of you.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah.
Very welcome to the show, Viewpoints. So regarding the speeches of the leader of Iran on the concept of human being, and the we can say the most important speeches that the rahbar gave on the role that the human being might have in today's world, there have been a series of discussions, and we try to get into the different dimensions and angles of the life of the human beings. Now for today's discussion, we want to talk about a very important topic with which the today's generation and also today's movement are also very engaged with, and that is freedom. They somehow define it as liberty, but I think freedom is a better term when we are talking about the Islamic one, because liberty might have root in some specific humanism in the Western theology and philosophy, but freedom in Islam might be defined in a different way.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. There are two things we need to look at in depth when we talk about liberty or freedom, to understand what it is that we're talking about when we talk about freedom or liberty. One is it absolute freedom? Everyone makes their own rules, no restrictions, or is it just freedom from unjust, unfair, irrational restrictions? The first one, the absolute freedom, no one can really believe in. It doesn't hold up. Some people might profess this, but in practice, you cannot have this, right?
You mean absolute freedom?
Absolute freedom.
That's right.
You cannot have absolute freedom, okay, because you will be restricting other people's freedom.
That's right.
At some point. So the question becomes, how do we define unjust and unfair restrictions to get rid of them? And it needs a value system. In the West, it's based on different philosophies or materialistic worldview.
Liberal capitalism, for example, nowadays,
yes,
talks about liberty.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yes. And in Islam, it's based on Tawheed.
Yes.
The second thing that we need to talk about is it external freedom, which is more associated with the word liberty?
That's right.
Being liberated from something external, or is it internal freedom? Internal from our own desires, our own wants, our own negligence, our own ignorance. Which one is it? And because a materialistic worldview is more concerned with the external world, in the West we see so much emphasis on the first type.
That's
and
right.
In Islam, we definitely have more emphasis on the second type, on internal freedom. And if you have internal freedom, you might be a prisoner, but you're a free man.
That's right. So you might be, you might not be free in terms of whatever you want to do in terms of the materialistic world, in physical terms around yourself, which of course led into so many catastrophes during the history of the Western, philosophy. We'll get to that. But internally, it's a type of freedom that you have. In Arabic, they call it Huriya, isn't it?
Yes.
You become a whore. You become like a free man. That whether, you know, you be a prison or a small place or not be engaged in any materialistic kind of world, but inside you sense a kind of freedom, which has roots in divinity. Thank you very much, Sheikh Sadat. Just these two categorizations by you for now?
Yeah, I think these two are very important.
Okay.
Understanding the meaning of freedom.
That's all right.
To start talking about it.
So what about you, Brother Ali? How do you define freedom in terms of the Islamic terms?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim.
May Allah's peace and blessings be upon the Holy Prophet of Islam Muhammad and his purified progeny. I believe freedom is one of the most oppressed terms in the course of history that actually has been violated, because it is being said that some believe that they are actually believe in freedom, but in practice, in reality, they really violate the freedom of themselves and the others. So in order to see what freedom is in an Islamic context and comparing to a Western or let's say humanistic worldview, we need to actually differentiate. We need to focus on these two worldviews. In an humanistic worldview, freedom is defined around the humanism, because the person, the individual, is important and is looked at as the center of the universe and the center of the world. So whatever is going to be defined as freedom actually rounds about the personality of the person, the individual. Whatever is good to him actually is appreciated and is respected, and whatever is bad for the person actually is rejected. And it is seen as something unrestricted, but in actuality it is restricted, because actually it violates the rights of others, and they come to make an agreement, or what they call it, a law, to define it and to limit it to some certain rules, but and they also actually reach to a way that it says that let's look at the will of the majority of the people in society, what is called as democracy. Again, why I said that even this freedom is being violated, because democracy in the most democratic, let's say, governments or let's say countries, we see that democracy is not actually the will of the majority of the people. We see that in practice it is the will of, let's say, a limited group of people who are ruling over the others, because those who democratically are elected or selected as the representatives of the people, later on they become those limited number of groups of people who are actually make decisions for the others.
Especially when we take a look at the Western world,
exactly,
we see that
the capitalistic.
This liberal capitalism has its own problems,
mm-hmm.
which cannot be the same prescription for all the people from all cultures,
very
all
true.
Around the world with different races and languages. Although I think the elite part of the society, which have their own role in shaping this democracy, have their own problems too. We see it, for example,
democracy theoretically in what is being said or written, is not actually that bad to say that. Okay, it can be actually modified to a better, let's say, form. But the most important element which is actually missing in democracy is the role of God.
That's right.
What we can actually vividly see it in the Islamic worldview towards freedom. We say human being is free in the line with Allah's worship and submission to Allah.
That's right.
Or in a tawhidi or in a tawhidi context.
Monotheistic context.
So in that we say that human is free, is not actually submissive to anyone in the world, any entity, any actual existence, except God. So which one is more free? The freedom that actually is circling around a person, but it is being defined by different elements, like different other peoples, many different other elements, like people, like groups, like political groups and parties, or the freedom that is being defined around the concept of God. So you mean that you are totally free, but your freedom is on the way, in line with Allah's worship and Allah's submission. So we believe that the freedom that is talked about in Islam is much more wider than the freedom that actually is looked at in the humanistic worldview. And by mystic, they actually claim, or they accuse Muslims or the followers of the Islam, that they have no freedom. But in reality, we see the results.
Not only the Muslims, but all the believers in the world from the other religions, are condemned for not having freedom or not living freely, but this is the life that we made for the people. For yeah. example, this is the land.
I'm asking, that we created. Which is more actually restricted? The one whose freedom is being actually restricted by many elements, okay. like this person, that person, this, let's okay. say, capitalistic power, or mm-hmm. the other, let's say, materialistic element.
That's right.
Or the one who is just limited to the words of God, to the words of God, or the submission to God. So it means that you are limited only from one side, and this side is good for your own spirituality, for your own existence, for your own tranquility.
And we see
so
that
which one is more beautiful and right. actually deserves to be thought about?
Especially nowadays with the role that the media has, we could see what are the consequences of absolute freedom in terms of the materialism in the Western world. You see how much the rate of mass killing of the people. These are absolutely rooted in the freedom seeking of the people inside themselves, you know, how much the rate of rape is increasing, you know, the killing of the people, the wars here and there. These are all rooted because of the man-centrism that the people are looking for. But according to what you said, Brother Ali, the true freedom is rooted in the monotheistic Islam. But Sheikh Sadeq, what is this monotheistic look? I mean, if you want to explain it for our dear listeners, how the concept of Tawheed and freedom might be connected, how do you define it? How do you explain it?
It's a very good question. I think one of the verses in the Quran that talks about this is overlooked because it's mentioned within a story, the story of Prophet Yusuf.
Mm-hmm.
When the prisoners ask Prophet Yusuf about the meaning of their dreams, Prophet Yusuf first gives them a theology lesson. He asks them this very fundamental question. He asks, أَأَرْبَابٌ مُتَفَرِّقُونَ خَيْرٌ أَمِ اللَّهُ الْوَاحِدُ الْقَهَّارُ. Which one is better? Having just one God or many gods? And you can see that there is no option for no God.
Okay.
We're always a servant.
Yes.
So the only options are you either have one God or you have many gods.
That's right.
Because we're not gods, right? We're not invincible.
Yes.
We're always in need for different things. We need food. We need security. We need a lot of things
yes.
to be able to sustain ourselves. So we either have one God who is our sustainer, who is our Razzaq, or we have many gods. We have our boss. We have our wife, our children,
yes.
our manager, our principal, the bullies in the school.
The statesman.
Yeah. Our desires, our anger, all of these become gods. And each of these want to take us towards itself, right?
Okay.
So we have many gods or just one God. Which one is better? And, of course, just having one God, one set of rules, gives you more freedom than having many gods that contradict each other. Right?
Yes.
So this is the fundamental basis of freedom when we talk about freedom in the context of Tawheed.
That's right.
Right? And this is why fundamentally you will never be able to get freedom in any other context
yes.
other than Tawheed.
You are making
this is why they're struggling
yes.
in the West
yeah, yeah.
to define the best way to get to freedom. And they will never succeed.
That's all right. Thank you very much, Sheikh Sadeq, and Brother Ali, thank you very much for your presence in the program. Viewpoint, it was very kind of you, the concept of freedom and liberty as discussed by the leader of the Islamic Ummah, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei. It was very kind of you. And dear listeners, thank you very much for listening to us. This is Viewpoints. I'm Atta, the host of this program. For more information, visit our website at parstoday.com/Ian Call of Islam page. Also, you can visit our YouTube channel and Instagram page, Call of Islam Radio. To another episode, God bless you all. Fi amanallah. La.
not the same when I'm too concerned by what they say. Why should I wanna have you? To doubt you would be the worst mistake. Deep inside I know, amidst all the darkness and everything which makes no sense, I know that you exist. Guides me through my darkest nights, shows me right from wrong in a world that often lies. As I don't need anyone, anything in life but you. No, I don't need anyone to show me my way. No, I don't need anyone but you.
Fruitful Moment with IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight.
Emerging data suggests that Delta could spread more readily than other coronavirus variants among people vaccinated against COVID-19. But key questions remain. In this regard, we have prepared an article for you written by Nidhi Saberman Ryder. This article is published under the heading, How Do Vaccinated People Spread Delta? What Science Says. Stay tuned for more. When early field data showed that vaccinating people caught transmission of the SARS-CoV-2 virus, researchers were cautiously optimistic. But they warned that many of those studies, although promising, took place before the fast-spreading Delta variant proliferated worldwide. Now reports from various counties seem to confirm what scientists feared after the variant tore through India with alarming speed in April and May. Delta is more likely than other variants to spread through vaccinated people. Data from COVID-19 tests in the United States, the United Kingdom, and Singapore are showing that vaccinated people who become infected with Delta SARS-CoV-2 can carry as much virus in their nose as do unvaccinated people. This means that despite the protection offered by vaccines, a proportion of vaccinated people can pass on Delta, possibly aiding its rise. People who have a Delta virus and happen to have breakthrough infections can carry these really high levels of virus and can unwittingly spread the virus to others, says David O'Connor, a virologist at the University of Wisconsin-Madison.
Thank you.
The findings underscore the importance of protective measures such as wearing masks indoors to reduce transmission. Researchers stress that COVID-19 vaccines are protective against serious illnesses and death. But the data on Delta transmission show that people who are vaccinated still need to take precautions, O'Connor says. O'Connor and colleagues at Madison and Dane County Health Department looked at infections in Wisconsin in June and July. The team used PCR tests, which are widely used to confirm COVID-19 infections, to estimate the concentration of virus in nasal fluid samples. The tests detect the virus genetic material by amplifying DNA until it is detectable as a fluorescent signal. The number of amplification cycles needed to get a signal, a measure called the cycle threshold value or CT, serves as a proxy for viral concentration in the sample. The lower a sample CT, the more viral genetic material present. In a preprint study published on MedRxiv on August 11th, the researchers compared CT values for 719 people between June 29th and July 31st, during which 90% of the 122 coronavirus samples they sequenced were the Delta variant. Of the 311 vaccinated people who tested positive for SARS-CoV-2 in that group, most had CT values of less than 25, a level at which researchers expect the presence of infectious SARS-CoV-2. To confirm this, the team cultured 55 samples that had CT values less than 25 from vaccinated and unvaccinated people and detected infectious virus in nearly everyone. Most unvaccinated people also had CT values below this level. The bottom line is this can happen. It can be true that vaccinated people can spread the virus, but we do not yet know what their relative role in overall community spread is, says co-author Thomas Friedrich, a virologist at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Data from Provincetown, Massachusetts suggests similar findings. An August report from the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, CDC, showed that following large gatherings in Beach Town, nearly three-quarters of 469 new COVID-19 cases that occurred in the state were in vaccinated people. Both vaccinated and unvaccinated people had comparably low CT values, indicating high viral loads, and of the 133 samples sequenced, 90% were identified as Delta. The findings prompted the CDC to update its guidance on July 27th and once again recommend that people in areas of high transmission wear masks indoors. The Provincetown results were linked to big gatherings, but Wisconsin didn't have similar activities, suggesting that the small household gatherings could also help Delta to spread, Friedrich says. In Houston, Texas, where a Houston Methodist hospital team has been sequencing and logging SARS-CoV-2 variants for almost every COVID-19 case in the hospital system, about 17% of Delta cases are in vaccinated people since March 2021, nearly three times the rate of breakthrough infections compared with all other variants combined. Patients with Delta SARS-CoV-2 also stayed in hospital slightly longer than did people infected with other variants. J. James Musser, a molecular pathologist and director of the Hospital Center for Molecular and Transnational Human Infectious Diseases Research, said there is potentially a slightly different biology to the infection. His team found that CT levels were similar in vaccinated and unvaccinated people. However, vaccinated people with Delta might remain infectious for a shorter period, according to researchers in Singapore, who tracked viral loads for each day of COVID-19 infection among people who had and hadn't been vaccinated. Delta viral loads were similar for both groups for the first week of infection, but dropped quickly after day 7 in vaccinated people. Given the high virus levels seen in the first week of illness with Delta, measures such as masks and hand hygiene, which can reduce transmission, are important for everyone, regardless of vaccination status, says co-author Barnaby Young, an infectious disease clinician at the National Center for Infectious Diseases in Singapore. One massive analysis of Delta transmission comes from the UK, led by a team at Imperial College London, which tests more than 100,000 UK volunteers every few weeks. The team ran CT analysis of samples received in May, June, and July, when Delta was rapidly replacing other variants to become the dominant driver of COVID-19 in the country. The results suggested that among people testing positive, those who had been vaccinated had a lower viral load on average than did unvaccinated people. Paul Elliott, an epidemiologist at Imperial, says that these results differ from other CT studies because this study sampled the population at random and included people who tested positive without showing symptoms. These findings, along with an increase in cases in younger people who have not yet received both jabs, underscore the effectiveness of double vaccination against Delta, Elliott says. We think it's really, really important to get as many people double vaccinated, and particularly those younger groups, as soon as possible.
Iranian news, Iranian culture, Iranian voice. This is IRIB English Radio.